Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
People deal with grief in funny ways. In 1978, a 9-year-old kid named Nicholas Beard drowned in the sea during a family holiday in Cornwall. There was a funeral, but then the Beard family went back to their holiday and never spoke of the tragedy again. 40 years later, his brother Richard set out to pierce that silence. He's the author of The Day That Went Missing, A Family Story. Richard, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Sean.
Now, what do you remember, or if you like, what do you think you remember from that day? Because it was an awful long time ago and you had tried resolutely not to think about it for four decades.
Well, I have one memory from the day which I could never get rid of, even though I tried very hard, which was being in the water with my brother when he drowned. So I had the details of that event. Everything else about him we didn't talk about for years until when my dad died. I went into his study, which is sort of one of the privileges of being a survivor, is you can go into the other people's filing cabinets and have a look through. And I thought I would find something which showed that he had Nicky in his mind all these years, and there'd be at least a drawer full of his stuff or something that he'd used to secretly remember Nicky all these years. And I didn't find anything at all apart from one plastic bag. It was just an ordinary green plastic bag, and I had his school reports in, the death certificate, and some commiseration letters. And that's when I thought this was really ridiculous, that we'd spent all this time, nearly 40 years by the time I went into my dad's study. Mm. And we'd let him die again and again and again by never remembering him. So I thought, well, I'll try and find out what happened on that day beyond my memory, and try and find out as much as I can about him as a person.
Yeah. When he died, there was a funeral. Neither you nor any of your siblings went to that funeral. And then you went back on holiday again to the same place, visited the same beach. At any point, did you kind of know instinctively not to bring up Nicky, or were you told not to talk about it?
No, I think at the time, so I was 11 and he was 9. My older brother was 13 and the youngest brother was 6. And I think it was quite normal at the time for children not to go to funerals. It was thought that it would be just too painful, and it was better to shelter children from that kind of emotion. But one of the strange things about going back to this holiday house and continuing the holiday is that me and my brothers had completely blanked this out. So we didn't know we'd done this. And when I came to ask around, it was only when my mum started talking about those days that she said this had happened. And we were all entirely shocked. So it had such an effect on us that we'd completely blanked it out. I think that it wasn't a case of saying, we will not talk about this. It was just following the example, particularly of my dad, who I think just couldn't bear it and just wanted to pretend that nothing had happened.
Mm. Now, you were going to boarding school, so you could go back to boarding school and not tell anyone any of this had happened. And I suppose operate that way through life for many decades afterwards. Was there an event or a series of events that prompted you to try and bring this out into the open again?
Well, it was mainly my dad's death, which made it feel that it could be done. I can't imagine having written this book, gone back to find this day that went missing if he was still alive. So I think that was the main catalyst. But I think there was something as well, when I look back at it, something very almost defiant in the way that he tried to deal with it. He was almost saying, "Look, death isn't going to ruin my holiday. I'm going to be stronger than that." It was his idea of strength. And he had a kind of endurance which was phenomenal, even if it was slightly misguided.
Mm. So you never really got the chance to talk to him about it, because he died by the time you'd started your investigation.
Well, when he was he died at home, and when he was on his deathbed, he had cancer, and we knew he was going to die. And I did raise one particular issue with him, which is that I had another memory from that time, which was that after Nicky died, my dad had said, it was the day after, he'd said, we gathered around this table, and he said, we should all say one thing, and he was going to write it down in this diary that he kept, and this was a secret diary, he hadn't even told my mum, and he said he had this diary, we'd say one thing, it would be written down, almost as if that would be the end of it. So I just asked him, on his deathbed about this diary, because I was very keen to see it and to know if it existed. And he just waved it away and said it had never existed. So I still don't know whether it had existed and he destroyed it, or whether, in fact, he just made it up as a way of bringing closure immediately after the death. And it had never existed at all. So I still don't know the answer to that question.
When you went, when you broached all this with your mother, how difficult was it for her to start speaking about it?
Well, strangely, when I was very difficult for me to ask the first question, just that first question, can we talk about Nicky now? But as soon as I'd said his name and I'd asked the question, it turned out she was really ready to speak about him. And I think it was a great relief to her. I know it's a great relief to her because she's read the book. She read the book in an early form, and she's read it. Now it's out again. And she says it's a relief, and she feels she can be herself again. And she'd wanted to talk about it all these years. And I realized how she had suffered from not talking about her dead child, which is a terrible suffering to bear.
Mm. Did you find then that your mother and your siblings had differing memories of that time and the days afterwards?
Well, this became apparent very quickly, and that's why I called the book The Day That Went Missing, because it had gone missing because we'd all remembered it in different ways. And unlike other big family events where families talk about it and therefore you almost agree on the memory, you agree on what happened at a particular event, you know, good or bad. Because we were never talking about it, all of our memories evolved differently, and they evolved away from each other. And we'd ended up with completely different versions in our own mind of what had actually happened. And what I wanted to do was try and find, as closely as possible, what the actual truth is, what actually happened. And I did have a slight advantage over the others in the sense that I'd been in the water with him, and they didn't even remember that, because it had never been mentioned.
That's extraordinary.
It was for me, because I assumed that everybody knew. And then suddenly I found out that nobody knew, because everyone had just gone off and remembered things in their different way. And those memories had changed as the years had gone by.
Yeah, because presumably you had been in the water with them. You probably run back to your parents and said something severely bad is happening, and somehow they would have reacted to that. But I suppose, does anybody remember whether that happened or not?
Well, this is it. I could remember running out of the sea, having saved myself, and running towards them, but I couldn't remember what I'd said. My mum did remember eventually what I'd said. Once she had to reject her first memory, which she'd created to keep herself a little bit safer. It was a bit of a gentler memory, actually, a less violent memory than what actually happened. So she remembered what I said, and that was part of the day that I managed to reconstruct. But afterwards, because we didn't speak about it, that was allowed to just fade away.
Mm. Now, as part of your investigation, you went and found the people who pulled Nicky's body out of the water and tried to revive him, and the grave digger, and there was a lot of circumstantial evidence, if you like, surrounding all this.
Well, there are some. I was very lucky because there was some documentary evidence that I felt that I could rely on, which did fill in a lot of the gaps. So there was a newspaper coverage at the time because it was quite widely covered in the newspapers. The undertakers had amazingly detailed records of what they'd done with the body, when they picked it up. The RNLI, the Lifeboat Association, had again, very clear records of what had happened. And I was incredibly lucky when I went down to the actual place. I mean, first I had to find out where it was, because I didn't even know where it was in England that it had happened. I went to the lifeboat station, and the operations manager who is working there now said, yes, this man lives around the corner, who was on the boat on that day, and he pulled my brother from the water into the lifeboat. And if you want to talk to him, I'll give him a ring. I mean, it was an amazing coincidence that he was still there and still in the village.
That's amazing. And you'd started from the point of not even knowing the date of his death or where exactly this beach was.
No, I didn't know anything at all. And again, that was when I realised that how lost this day had become, how missing it was. And I eventually found out the date by asking my mum, because it wasn't on his gravestone. And then I found the death certificate. But it was only from his death certificate that I found out his birthday. So, again, I realized if you're finding out your brother's birthday from his death certificate, then something's gone wrong.
Did many of you have memories of Nicky when he was alive, and did those memories tally with each other?
Well, that's what came out of this, is if you make a huge effort, as our family did, to try and suppress and deny this terrible, tragic event, is you can't help but deny something of the person as well. This kind of denial, it's not a precision tool. You can't decide, I'm going to get rid of this and nothing else. Mm. And unfortunately, by trying to forget the terrible memory of the day, we had ended up actually erasing Nicky to a certain extent. And he was 9 years old. He'd had I've had 9 year old boys in my house, and they have a lot of life to them. They're fully human beings. And part of what I wanted to do was to rediscover the person he'd been. And certainly our memories of him needed refreshing. And my own memories, what came back, which was slightly uncomfortable, was that we'd been rivals, competitors. We hadn't actually liked each other very much at that stage in our life. Mm. And maybe that had contributed to the urge or at least contributed to the fact it was quite uncomfortable to remember him at the time after what had happened. So that was a revelation.
Thus, in denying it, and one can understand the desire to deny the death or deny the pain and the awfulness of all this, was there perhaps a bit of guilt there as well? That you were with him, maybe you didn't do enough to save him, maybe your father felt he didn't do enough to save him.
Yeah, I think there was definitely that. I mean, I was the older brother, and the two of us had gone off. As the story was reconstructed of that day, we'd asked for one last swim, but then I was thinking, if I was older, I'd probably asked for that. I'm sure that I felt guilt at the time, which I don't feel so much now, because the more I found out about it, the more I realized there were lots of circumstances which were just contributed to a series of bad luck events. There was a lot of bad luck involved. I think my parents did feel guilty, because when a child dies, I think it's very difficult, especially in those circumstances where we were aware that a beach and the sea is dangerous, but had underestimated it. And I think my dad in particular would have felt very guilty, because he was unable to save his son. But another thing I discovered when I was finding out about this day is that he had a cancer in his neck at the time, which was thought to be terminal. And it was thought to be, this would be the last holiday we'd ever have as a family together. So he had other things on his mind as well. And that must have made it all very difficult for him.
Yeah. Looking back on that period when nobody spoke about it, did it to some degree inform your relationships with your parents or your siblings?
Well, I think it must have done. It's if there's this event which was central to our childhood, right there is the most important thing that happened to us, and then we never talk about it. It does suggest that emotional distance must spread into other areas of life. And that was another reason why I wanted to find out about this day that went missing, because I didn't want to live anymore with this emotional distance. I wanted my family to be closer. And one of the things that has happened is we have become closer. My mum and my brothers, we're much closer than we were before I started out on the project of the book.
Richard, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That's Richard Beard there. He's the author of The Day That Went Missing, A Family Story.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.